Hi, welcome to Digital Explained to My Mom, the podcast that cuts through the marketing wah-wah. My name is Sultan Simlali. I'm a business consultant passionate about marketing and technology. A couple of months ago, I had a hard time explaining to my mom what I was doing in my day job. I struggled so much that she politely said, interesting, would you like more coffee? Talking about an experience with friends and colleagues, I realized that I was not alone. This is why I have decided to go on a quest. Find a marketing professional that will be able to tell me who they are, what they do, in words my mom would understand. Enjoy the show. Today I'm meeting Guido Jansen. Guido is digital customer experience consultant and team manager. Guido is a very interesting guy. He has a psychological and analytical background, which we'll discuss about. We came in contact after the Magento acquisition by Adobe a couple of months ago. And after seeing his profile, seeing the type of conferences and workshops he's giving, but also the fact that he's a podcast host for two great podcasts, the Chanto podcast and the one on conversion optimization. I asked Guido if he was willing to participate to Digital Explain to My Mom. So thank you, Guido, for being on the podcast.
You're welcome. Excited to be here.
So, Guido, I tried to give an intro to who you are, but I think you would be way better to do it yourself.
I hope so. But there are a lot of things I do, a lot of things I find interesting. So I have a mixed profile, so to say. Okay. So indeed, my background is in psychology. So more the usability part of psychology, not people laying on couches talking about their issues. But more of the psychology kind where we look at the human behavior when people interact with their environments.
Okay.
And my specialty, obviously, is more the digital environments when people interact with websites, how they behave and how we can help them basically make less mistakes. that's what we're trying to do. And obviously, for commercial companies, this means less mistakes by the customer. That means more money for the company.
Yeah. Okay.
And so yeah, like you touched upon the Chanto part. Also, like doing some community management besides this. So I founded the Chanto over 10 years ago, which is a local Dutch part of the Magento community. Mm-hmm. And I bring together the community. I organize events, workshops, and once a year we have a big Me and Magento conference with over 550 people joining each year to collaborate, to exchange knowledge, and that's also really fun to do.
Yeah. Wow. And that's only for the Netherlands?
That's only for the Netherlands.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So Netherlands is really a tiny country, so it's very impressive that you are.
Yeah. In the Magento world, we're a big country. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So how did you get where you are today?
A lot of trial and error, I would say.
A lot of A-B testing in your life.
A lot of A-B testing, yeah, definitely. When I started in psychology during my college years, I already started building websites for people, which back then had nothing to do with the psychology part, or it wasn't really big on usability. Mm-hmm. That did get my interest sparked in technology, in digital. And in later years, I started working on project management for e-commerce projects. And more and more usability became a big part of that. More and more we saw, okay, it's not just important to be online, or companies realizing that. It's not important just to be online, but there needs to be a good experience online. That's important to have. And not everyone is used to navigating a digital experience, a digital environment. And we need to help people with that. And more companies see that it helps to have a psychology background to analyze that, to analyze the behavior, and also to see, okay, what can we do to improve this, the environment. So that's how I step-by-step rolled into what I'm doing right now. Mm-hmm. And also makes my, at the topic of this podcast, also makes my mother very happy that I'm still doing things with my background, not just being behind a computer and doing nerdy stuff, but also actually applying my university degree.
So she sent you to university, but you're doing something with it. And can you give us an example on the importance of it, or maybe something you've been working on, a very interesting learning.
So how I would apply my psychology knowledge to online?
So
one of the practical skills you learn when studying psychology is analyzing human behavior. And back in college, this was still very limited, as in you do live interviews with people, or you get people to interact with your machine, like a ticketing machine or a vending machine, and you just observe their behavior, and you note down their behavior, and hope to get enough people in to get some to be able to say something about it.
Yeah.
The great thing about the internet is that it's a worldwide playground where we can collect data.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there are some ethical questions around that, but putting that aside for now.
Don't talk about ethics.
Well, we can definitely talk about it, but just the pure scale of the internet is a great playground for psychologists. And of course, there's a big... you need to be conscious about the type of data you're collecting. Online, we can, for example, when you have an analytics tool, you can definitely see what people are doing, where people are clicking. Mm-hmm. But you don't necessarily know why they are doing this, or if there's an inaction, why is there an inaction? That's really hard to determine. So interviews with people are still very valuable, but in combination with the power of the World Wide Web, the data you can gather, that's way more powerful. And there are also initiatives, at least in the Netherlands, to get more traditional psychology studies and organizations linked in or connected to the business, online business, to get way more powerful research going on. How to apply psychology principles online? There are loads of them. I think one of the famous ones would be social proof, showing people how many people bought this product, or how many people are browsing this page at this time at this hotel right now. Those are powerful principles that can be applied across the web. And of course, the interesting part is still that although these are very well known principles, there are still a lot of cases where they might not work for you specifically. So they may work in 80% of the cases, but if you're in that 20%, be careful not just to copy your competitor. It might not work for you.
It's true. The social pressure thing, it was like when you're on booking.com and then you look for a hotel, and then they just tell you that other people are looking at the same hotel, but then you feel like, oh my god, I need to book it now, because otherwise someone will steal it from me.
Yep.
So that's psychology.
Yeah.
And that's how... Okay. And so the ethics side of thing, if we get back to that...
If you would consider, if it's just for e-commerce, like, we get people to buy more products from me, sure. But there are also a lot of things for governments, for example, or when you work for a bank.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of psychologists or colleagues of mine work for banks, financial industries. We're selling people or getting people into debt. So that's where there's a sliding scale there. You need to be careful what you're doing. You need to be conscious about, we can apply these principles, but are we doing a good thing in the end? And of course, there are a lot of government government bodies that are also looking into this and starting to set up rules for this. For example, the podcast you mentioned, CRO Cafe. I just interviewed someone that's working on specifically campaigns around mortgages, because in the Netherlands we had aflossingsvrij mortgages. So people just paid rent and didn't actually pay back the house. And this was very popular in 2003-2005, and around 1 million of those mortgages were sold. And so in 2038, of those over 1 million mortgages, people... you only paid rent, so you need to leave your house if you cannot pay the total amount of the mortgage. And we're now psychologists are now working together with the banks and the government to see, how can we get people to move? I mean, this was a legal thing to do. It was nothing illegal, but no. It was people are might get into trouble.
Yeah.
And there might be people. Of course, you can get your savings in order, and a lot of people might be doing that.
Yeah.
But a part of the population might not be doing that, and you can use psychology principles to help people convince and to get people to move, to get people to act, and not just send people an email by the way, okay, hey, you might be in trouble in 15 years. Do you want to talk?
Yeah.
That might scare people off.
Yeah, they'll say, oh, whatever, or they'll be scared.
Yeah, but you can also do it more consciously, saying, okay, this is going on.
Yeah.
We are here to help you.
Mm-hmm.
These are the facts.
Yeah.
And let's see how we can help you. We need to move on this. We need to take action.
Yeah.
And we're here for you to help.
Mm-hmm.
And other things, we a couple of years ago, we did an experiment online, also financial sector. And besides mortgages, on the banking website, there are different types of products. So you have mortgages, you have a savings account, or get a smaller loan from the bank. We applied social proof on those different types of products. And the social proof was just that and it was a true number. We showed the number of people getting this product within the last month or something, or requested more information about this product. So that's showing social proof, right?
Yeah.
But even on the website of that bank, the same bank, same type of audience you would expect, we saw different effect of that social proof. So of the social proof, where if it's a socially acceptable product, so you opening a savings account, you might be happy with it,
that's
right?
That's acceptable.
You're saving money. That's good. That's good.
You're a good man.
You're getting a mortgage. You're buying a house. Congratulations!
Great.
It's the biggest loan you can get. A real big debt. You're in debt now, but it's socially it's a good thing.
Yeah.
But you requesting a loan from the bank because you're car broke down and you cannot pay it and you need to get a loan from the bank, that's not necessarily something you put on Facebook and saying, hey, I got a loan to
to fix my car.
And we also saw that social proof has a negative impact. If you add social proof to a socially negative situation, we saw a negative impact of that social proof. You need to be careful with just applying any principle.
Yeah.
It helps if you have some psychology insights in that. And even if you do, please run an experiment and validate if it's actually working for you. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It reminds me of the red button thing with the Obama campaign in 2008, where the Obama campaign was very successful online because everyone thought there's a red button, donate.
Yeah.
And then in 2008, 2009, everyone was pushing red buttons. We need red buttons.
And if your whole website is red, a red button is probably not going to do anything.
No, indeed, yeah.
Yeah.
So you also need to be able...
It's more about the contrast, usually.
Yeah, okay, Oh, that's really cool. So you apply those psychology principles, you test. So you take a small segment of the people visiting website to do the test.
Or a big segment,
okay.
Yep.
Interesting. And then, depending on the results, then you apply. This is really what it's...
Yeah, actually, so what I see as my role is more like informing the product owner, usually. We inform the product owner, saying, okay, if you take this decision, this is the effect it will have.
Okay.
And then it's up to the product owner to make a decision, okay, are we going to go for this or not?
Yeah.
For example, there are also things we cannot necessarily measure.
Mm-hmm.
Like the effect on your brand is really long-term thing. I cannot, with experiments, those usually last 4 weeks.
Yeah.
It's really hard to measure the impact on the whole population of how people perceive your brand.
Yeah.
So there are still, and I'm not saying brand is always the number one thing that's going to cancel everything and say, okay, we cannot do this because brand. After a while, that's not a good reason anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But you can say, okay, you can make this decision saying, okay, brand is more important, so we cannot change the color of this button.
Yeah.
This is fine, but we're losing 2 million a month because of this.
Yeah.
You need to have a good reason. You really have a good reason, and to trust your brand that it's worth that 2 million. If you think that's okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
And but what you usually see, that's one test that might be a bit of a struggle, but okay, maybe brand still wins.
Yeah.
But if you do like 10 of those tests, and after a while you see a trend saying, hey, maybe our brand doesn't really suit the way our visitors or our customers see us, and doesn't really connect with them with the way they actually want to interact with us.
So you use data to be able to understand what the business impact can be, and helping actually decision makers.
So the reason to do an experiment can be indeed business changes. But also another important part is just observing those users and seeing, okay, where are people stuck in the process? For example, the checkout process with e-commerce. Where are in which stage are people stuck? So we can, and that's usually something you see in your analytics tool. Okay, where are people stuck? But you might not know why. Then you do an interview or interview series. Saying, okay, to get a feel why are people stuck. And then, using psychology, using the experience that the team has, you build different variations to see, okay, which variations improve the behavior of the customer based on the hypothesis that you have.
So you have a hypothesis, you do some tests, you look at how people react, and then go again.
So a
good working digital team, I imagine, is with that a lot. That's actually one of the core competencies that you need to do as an online brand today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. I think so.
Yeah, I mean.
And customer behavior is also changing really fast, right? And for people working at a company, it's usually hard to grasp, okay, what do customers actually do? There's usually large, even physical distance between the people working at a company and the actual customers.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to bridge that gap. But also trying to change existing assumptions within the company, saying, okay, but we did a research 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
This is how our customers, what they want, how they react, who they are. These are the personas.
Yeah.
Well, in 5 years, it might be totally different. So you need to keep experimenting, keep reevaluating the values you have as a company, and the way you implement that in your digital channels.
Mm-hmm. And is that a big challenge? Do you see that like the main challenge for organizations when you work within big companies?
Yeah, a main challenge is the culture within the company. Mm-hmm. So people being open to experimentation and being open to changes. It's difficult for people to acknowledge that they might not be right.
Mm-hmm.
And that those things are changing, especially when you have for example a marketing team at a traditional company or branding team just putting out messages and then suddenly there's this team experimenting and telling you, hey, but this is actually not working, this has no impact, or we might be better off reallocating resources to a different strategy, and that's difficult for a lot of companies, I mean, it's not natural for a lot of people to run those experiments, right?
No.
It's changing things. Things when you run experiments, things might end up worse, or at least within the experiment, and that might feel a bit counterintuitive, right? Things might get worse, sure, and oftentimes they do. For example, at Booking.com, they famously claim that 1 in 10 experiments is a success. Which means 9 in 10 of the experiments doesn't do anything or is a failure. The numbers go down. And this also shows you that you need to do, if you run 1 experiment a month, it's probably not worth your time.
No.
You need to have a certain body of tests, a certain volume of it, to make this really work for you. But if 1 in 10 is a big success, if 1 in 10 tests is a 5% uplift for you, you just, those 9 that are a failure, you don't have to implement them, and you might still learn from them. It might not be a business revenue success, but you might still learn from them. And that's again input to make your new tests more successful.
So taking the learnings and then and even when it fails.
But that mindset, that's a difficult one for a lot of people.
Definitely. I mean, this is, you talked about brand, you talk about products, and these are all your babies, in a sense. And
exactly.
Then,
yeah.
And then somebody else tells you, no, you need to do something different with your babies. Yeah. And that's very hard.
Yeah. And, well, for example, for developers, you can imagine the developer team always building stuff and then building stuff based, even when it's agile, building stuff based on a plan. And then there's an experimentation team telling you, okay, but we want to test these 10, 20, 30 different things. And as a development team, that might feel a bit weird. Okay, but so we are spending all this time on running those experiments, but we have other things to do. We have big projects to run. So at the start, it might feel annoying for the development team. Mm. But usually when I get in and after a couple of months, they start seeing the value of this, because then they start to see, okay, but those 20 experiments, a lot of them show failure, but those experiments are based on the plans that we already have, the things that we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Those experiments start validating those bigger projects.
Yeah.
And if those bigger projects, if we cannot validate the value, then we actually don't need to do them.
It's
starting to save us time.
Yeah,
and for a lot of developers, it's also really frustrating when they work for months on a big project and then it goes live and it's not a success because it doesn't connect to the customer, it's not validated, it's a really immature version that doesn't really connect the brand, the company to the customer.
Yeah.
And when you start validating much earlier in the process, it starts. Then they start seeing the value, and then it becomes much more interesting for them too. And say, okay, hey, and then after a couple of months, they say when a new project comes along, they say, okay, but have you validated this? Has the experiment team looked at it? Otherwise, we're not gonna do it. And that's a really good sign for the project. But it takes definitely at least a couple of months before really people start seeing the value of this.
Yeah, it takes a lot of convincing power. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is, to me, one of the best explanation I've had into agile way of working, but also prototyping and testing. So it's a great example. So the podcast is called Digital Explain to My Mom.
Yep.
So you said earlier that your mom is pretty proud of you.
At least happy that I'm still doing something with my university background, definitely.
So what does she know about what you do?
Well, she's not that digitally inclined. She's already struggling using a laptop or she usually uses their phone or her phone or the tablet.
Mm-hmm.
But explaining to her what I do is actually it's relatively easy, because she often struggles doing things.
Yeah.
And then I say, hey, that's interesting. That's what I do. I help companies solve what the issues that you're having right now.
Yeah.
Whether it's like uploading a picture, or then she has an issue with even. And it's really interesting to see people that are not that into digital struggle with, and it really. It triggers my brain again, saying, okay, this is really interesting, because it's so simple for me.
Yeah.
And it again proves that it's really important to connect with your audience, to connect with your actual users, to see them struggle. And if I get frustrated when sitting next to my mother using the simplest tools like Dropbox.
Yeah.
How can you, for me, it's like, how can you not understand how this is working?
Yeah.
But for her, it's a big struggle. And it takes her half an hour to do something.
Yeah.
And it's eye-opening for me to see what she's struggling with. And like I said, it's not something that necessarily your analytics is going to tell you.
No.
It's really about the broad range of research that you need to apply to get a really good understanding of your customer and how they are struggling.
Yeah.
Usually I have to help my mother a lot with setting up their Wi-Fi at home, or setting up the laptop, or Sings or email and that kind of stuff. But then, like I said, then it helps her understand what I actually what I try to do as companies. Yeah.
No, that's really good. So you're saving. Yeah, so your mom sees you as the savior of usability.
Yeah, the savior. Yes.
Now, so what? A side note. I sometimes see my parents also struggle with tech, and then I'm like, how will I struggle within 20, 30 years? And then, So that's kind of scares me. Like, okay, I'll be in that situation later, and I'll be like, oh, OK, Kate, can you help me?
Oh, you're lucky. Still 20. I'm still already struggling with. I mean, if I open Snapchat, I have no idea what.
I deleted Snapchat. So.
Yeah, that's making me feel old.
Yeah.
But there are already these kind of things popping up that I'm struggling with. I'm thinking, okay, this. I'm clearly not the target audience. Or if I am, then they really need to hire me.
So there's a message for Snapchat. You guys need to hire Guido.
Yeah.
So, Guido, imagine you meet someone who's 18, 20, finishing school or struggling at university. What would you give them as a piece of advice?
Continuously keep investing in yourself. Always keep learning. Things are moving really fast. Don't get stuck in just one area with your... Yeah, it's good to have a couple of expertise. Mm-hmm. And if things change a lot with blockchain, with AI. You can be very specialized, but still keep an open mind. Look at the trends in the market.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you might be replaced in a couple of years.
Yeah.
I mean, starting out with chauffeurs,
true.
People driving cars. In a couple of years, we might not have those anymore.
Yeah.
The same things might happen to other areas.
Yeah.
Go to events.
Yeah.
Talk to people.
Okay.
I go to events monthly. It helps me to speak at events. If that's not your thing, don't do it. But it really helps me to connect with my peers.
Yeah.
And when I'm on the stage. It's usually easier for people not knowing me telling me I'm wrong.
Yeah,
that really helps.
That's your A/B test.
That's also an A/B test. Yeah, yeah. Well, the presentations keep evolving. That's definitely the case. And build your personal brand.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, don't get started. Like for me, for example, I'm very well known in the Magento world.
Yeah.
But I also do a lot with conversion optimization.
Yeah.
It's not just one thing.
No.
I'm betting on. Especially I don't think it's a good thing to really get locked into to a certain tool, because tools are definitely replaceable.
Yeah.
Get into more the mindsets or the quality of your work, get known for that.
And I think that the cool thing I think about your profile is that you're a psychologist now doing a lot of digital stuff.
Yes, for many people it's not the most natural combination, but for me it feels really natural, because I'm on a daily basis working with human behavior.
Yeah.
And I have way more data and way more options available to me than most of my offline psychology colleagues.
True. Yeah.
So that's actually, for me, it feels very natural. But yeah, I encounter a lot of people that think, hey, a psychologist and IT, that's really weird.
Yeah.
But it helps for me, I think. When I started out during college, I like I said, I started building websites.
Yeah.
So I can still talk to people in IT. I can still talk to developers. That really helps, definitely.
Yeah.
I know how to work with PHP, HTML, CSS, JavaScript.
Yeah.
I don't do that professionally, but I know how it works.
Indeed. And that's so important, I think, regarding credibility and also the ability to know what is possible and what is not.
Yeah.
So that you don't ask developers to do stuff that will be like, no, that's impossible. Where is it coming from? So
And it helps you to prototype things yourself, right?
Yeah.
So with a lot of experiments, you need to build something, create an MVP.
Yeah.
It helps if you can do that yourself.
Yeah.
And then say, okay, this is just a working, hopefully working prototype.
Yeah.
But to get the message across, then the professionals can take it over for me and actually build the product or the actual experiment. Yeah.
Yeah. So we might want to do maybe another session on prototyping. I think and it's a very interesting topic, design thinking and prototyping, and how do you create products that people can test and love.
Yeah, or even before that, we did a lot of times when before you start building out a new feature or a new product, just start putting it out there to see how people respond to it.
Yeah.
If you have an e-commerce business which is just static one-off products and you want to experiment with subscription, for example, create a subscription section on your website or start just buy Google AdWords and for a subscription model, see how people click on that and respond to that. And of course, you need to have a sensible follow-up for that.
Yeah.
If the product is not there yet, but it helps you to gain insights into your audience and if it's worthy to even start building your new feature or product.
Okay, that's a golden tip. Okay, so how can people know more about you and connect with you?
If you want to connect with me, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram.
On Snapchat?
Not on Snapchat. Well, maybe there's still a profile for me on there. I don't know, but I don't think I've ever posted there. My website is gui.do.
Okay.
Very short, very simple.
Yeah.
And this is the main hub for all the content that I put out there.
Okay.
And like I said, we have the Decento website, decento.org.
Yeah.
We have Me Magento events every year in Netherlands, me-magento.nl.
Yeah.
And the other podcast is Ciro.cafe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. So we'll provide links to
in show notes.
Yeah. All of that as part of the show notes.
Yeah.
And people will be able to connect with you and pursue the conversation. I really want to thank you for taking part of the podcast. It was really, really, really interesting. And I spoke to a psychologist without lying on a couch talking about my issues.
Yeah.
Maybe we can do that after I finish the podcast.
I know some people, so if you need some of that help, then
that's great. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Guido.
Thank you.
Okay, bye. Thanks for listening to Digital Explained to My Mom, the podcast that cuts through the marketing wah-wah. If you like the podcast, please rate it with 5 stars on iTunes or the podcasting app you use. Remember that sharing is caring, so feel free to share with your friends and colleagues. You will find the show notes on our website, digitalexplainedtomymom.com. I'm looking forward for your feedback, ideas, and more. So let's connect on LinkedIn. My name is Sultan Simnali. Or on Twitter, where I go by the name of Sultanology. The music you have heard is from bensound.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.